Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, I want you to imagine for a second that you're sitting in a grand concert hall, right? You're listening to this live symphony orchestra.
Okay, I love a good symphony.
Right, but instead of actually taking in the music, you've been given this really strange task. You have to sit there and just like count how many times each individual musician plays a specific note.
Oh, wow. So you basically end up as an accountant rather than an actual audience member.
Exactly. You're just sitting there like, okay, the first violinist played an A sharp 40 times. The cellist played a C 10 times.
Which is incredibly tedious.
And at the end of the concert, you have this massive spreadsheet of note counts. But someone asked you, well, how did the symphony actually sound? You'd have absolutely no idea.
Right, because you completely miss the harmony.
You miss the timing, you miss the coordination between all the instruments. And for years, I mean, this is basically how we've been studying the human body, specifically the pancreas, when it comes to type 2 diabetes. We've been looking at the cells that make insulin, and we've just been, you know, counting which genes are being loud and which genes are being quiet.
Yeah, in genomics, we call that looking for differential expression. We treat the cell like a biological spreadsheet rather than, you know, a dynamic system.
But what really happens when the coordination between these genes breaks down? Like, how could shifting our focus from those single notes to the entire symphony change our approach to treating diabetes at the single cell level?
It's a huge question. It forces this fundamental shift in how we interpret biological data. It completely opens up a whole new landscape of what might actually be driving the disease at a structural level.
Revealing secrets that traditional methods have just, quite frankly, completely missed. So today we celebrate the work of a collaborative team of researchers, primarily from the Karolinska Institute and Lund University, who have advanced our understanding of type 2 diabetes by mapping the hidden networks inside our cells.
It is such a fascinating deep dive.
It really is. Okay, so let's unpack this. We were talking about type 2 diabetes, which is obviously a massive, massive global health challenge.
Yeah, it really is. And at its core, the clinical problem of type 2 diabetes, or TTD, it's driven by two main factors.
Right, the insulin resistance is the big one people know about.
Exactly. First, you have insulin resistance in the body's tissues. Your muscles and liver just, they stop responding well to the insulin signal. But second, and this is really what we are focusing on today, is the failure of the beta cells in the pancreas.
Those are the cells that actually make the insulin.
Right. They live in these little clusters called pancreatic islets. And in T2D, they basically fail to release enough insulin to compensate for that resistance in the body.
So the beta cells are basically the insulin factories. And the factory's just failing.
Exactly.
And scientists have been trying to figure out why for decades now. But historically, they ran into this major technical roadblock with those pancreatic islets, right?
Yeah, they did. Because those islets, they aren't just made of beta cells. They are actually composed of five distinct endocrine cell types.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize there were that many.
Yeah, and they're all mixed together in this tiny biological village, basically. So when past research looked at the genetics of these islets, they used something called bulk transcriptomics.
Which means they just ground everything up together.
Exactly. They ground up the whole islet and sequence the RNA all at once.
That feels like trying to understand the economy of a massive city by hanging like a giant microphone over a football stadium.
Yeah.
You capture a lot of noise, but you have no idea who is actually talking.
That is the perfect way to look at it, honestly. You couldn't tell if a gene was acting weird in a beta cell, an alpha cell, or a delta cell. It was just a blur.
So how did we get past the stadium microphone problem?
Well, recently, technology evolved to allow for single-cell RNA sequencing. So this lets researchers sequence the RNA in one individual cell at a time.
Okay, so it is like taking your stadium microphone and instead walking right up to one specific fan in, say, seat 4B, and interviewing them directly.
That's exactly it, but there was a catch.
There's always a catch in biology.
Right, so different single-cell studies of T2D islets, they actually had almost no overlap in their findings.
Wait, really? which has to be incredibly frustrating if you're a researcher trying to find a cure.
Yeah.
Why were the studies so inconsistent if they were finally looking at single cells?
Because they were still using that symphony tallying method you mentioned earlier.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they were interviewing the fan in seat 4B, but they were only asking them, hey, how many times did you shout today compared to a fan in a healthy stadium? They were just looking for genes that were simply turned up or turned down in disease versus health.
So it's like trying to figure out the plot of a movie by just counting how many times the actors say the word the. You need to know who is talking to whom.
Yes, exactly.
So how does this new study actually solve that data problem?
Well, the researchers developed a computational tool called DGCNA.
Okay, DGCNA. What does that stand for?
It stands for Differential Gene Coordination Network Analysis. So instead of just asking, is gene A turned on or off? This algorithm looks across thousands of cells and asks, is gene A behaving in mathematical sync with gene B?
Oh, wow. So it's looking for relationships.
Right. It measures correlation coefficients to actually map out gene coordination.
So it's literally mapping how pairs of genes behave together within a single cell type.
Yes. And more importantly, how that relationship changes in a type 2 diabetic cell versus a healthy cell.
That is wild.
But to do this, they needed incredibly rich data. They combined two high-depth data sets of hand-picked human islets from organ donors, totaling over 8,500 individual cells.
And half from people with T2D, half from non-diabetic individuals, right?
Correct. And they specifically use a technology called SmartSeq2.
Wait, before we dive into what they found, you mentioned they used high-depth data sets and something called SmartSeq2. I mean, a lot of standard single-cell sequencing prioritizes counting tens of thousands of cells, right? But it only gets a shallow read of each one.
Yeah, that's a standard trade-off.
But these researchers went for depth, getting around 1 million reads per cell. What does a read actually look like physically? Are we just taking a million tiny snapshots of the RNA?
Kind of. Imagine taking a massive library of books, so that's the cell's RNA, and putting it through a paper shredder.
Okay, visualizing a very messy library right now.
Right. A read is pulling one tiny shredded strip of paper out of the pile and determining the sequence of letters on it.
Got it.
So if you only pull out 10,000 strips for a whole cell, you get a very shallow summary of the library. You might know a book about insulin is in there somewhere.
But you wouldn't know the plot.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you pull out 1 million strips per cell, you can reconstruct almost the entire library in high fidelity.
Oh, I see.
That deep dive into the transcriptome is what provides enough mathematical signal to map out these complex, subtle gene-to-gene relationships.
Okay, so here's where it gets really mind-blowing for me. A gene's expression level doesn't even need to change to be flagged as disease-causing by this DGCNA algorithm.
No, it doesn't.
Like, it doesn't have to get louder or quieter. Its relationship to other genes just needs to be altered.
Yeah, it's a huge paradigm shift. A protein might be present in completely normal amounts inside the cell, but if it has stopped coordinating with its cellular partners, the biological pathway just fails.
And standard differential expression methods completely blind us to that reality.
Completely blind.
Okay, so they unleash this algorithm on the deep sequenced beta cells. What actually emerged from the data?
Well, the tool automatically identified 11 distinct networks of differentially coordinated genes. They call them NDCGs.
NDCGs, okay.
Essentially, they are 11 functional clusters that are fundamentally altered in T2D beta cells. Some were hypercoordinated, meaning the genes were working overtime together.
And I'm guessing some were the opposite.
Right, some were decoordinated, meaning the networks were basically falling apart.
Okay, let's talk about the ones working overtime first. If the cell is a factory, what departments are suddenly pulling double shifts?
The algorithm found three main hyper-coordinated networks. First, a network made almost entirely of ribosome genes.
Ribosomes, so those are the cellular protein factories, right? And in beta cells, their main job is translating insulin.
Exactly. So that's the first one. Second, a network directly related to the insulin secretion machinery. And third, a network for lysosomes.
Wait, lysosomes? Those are usually known as the recycling centers or like the stomach of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Why would those be working overtime?
That's a great question. The researchers pointed out a specific process called chronophagy.
Chronophagy?
Yeah, it's essentially a cellular garbage disposal mechanism. In T2D, this lysosomal network is working in overdrive to eat and degrade excess insulin granules that just aren't being processed correctly.
Oh my God, so the beta cell is desperately trying to make more insulin, desperately trying to secrete it, and simultaneously having to eat its own degraded product because the whole system is just choking on itself?
That's a very visceral way to put it, but yes, exactly.
Wow, okay, so if the cell is frantically trying to build more insulin factories, what is happening to the structural scaffolding holding the cell together? I mean, that brings us to the decoordinated networks, right?
Right. So there are 8 networks falling apart, but 4 are particularly critical.
Okay, what were they?
There was a breakdown in the mitochondria network, which are the energy producers, a breakdown in glycolysis, which is how the cell senses and uses glucose.
Makes sense for diabetes.
Yeah. A breakdown in microfilaments, which relates to the cell's physical structural organization. And finally, a massive decoordination in the unfolded protein response, or the UPR.
Okay, so finding mathematical networks on a computer screen is great data science. But I have to ask, does this actually translate to real living biology? Like, did they prove these networks actually caused the disease physically?
They did. They didn't just stop at the computational algorithm. They took these mathematical predictions straight into the lab.
Oh, awesome.
Let's look at the unfolded protein response, the UPR. So beta cells are professional secretors. They manufacture astronomical amounts of insulin.
Right.
And if those insulin proteins misfold during production, it causes massive cellular stress. The UPR is the emergency response system that handles that stress.
And the algorithm said this emergency response system was losing its coordination in diabetes.
Exactly. The DGCNA tool specifically flagged a gene called CEBPG as being highly ranked within this failing UPR network.
CEPG. Was that a known big player?
Not really. CEPG wasn't widely known as a major player in human beta cells before this.
Oh, interesting. So they knocked it out in the lab to see what would happen.
Yeah.
But how does a single gene control an entire emergency response system?
Oh.
Is it acting like a manager?
Yeah, pretty much. CEPG codes for a transcription factor. It is a master switch that binds to DNA and controls the expression of downstream chaperone proteins.
Chaperones, right. Those are the workers that physically fold the insulin correctly.
Exactly. When researchers knocked out the CEBPG in mice and in cultured beta cell lines, the beta cells couldn't activate those UPR mediators.
So what happened to the cells?
The cells suffered massive protein aggregation. Literally, microscopic clumps of misfolded proteins built up inside the cell, and the stress response completely failed.
Wow. So the math predicted this obscure master switch was the linchpin of the stress response network, and the biology experiment proved it completely right.
Exactly.
That is so cool. Okay, let's look at that microfilament network they found. You mentioned it deals with the cell's physical structure. The algorithm flagged a pair of duplicated genes called TMM176A and B. I usually hear about actin microfilaments when we talk about muscles contracting, or just the basic physical scaffolding holding a cell's shape.
Right. It acts as scaffolding. But in beta cells, actin filaments serve as a dynamic moving barrier.
A barrier.
Yeah, they physically hold the insulin granules back inside the cell, and then they have to rapidly depolymerize, or basically remodel themselves, to let the insulin out when your blood sugar rises.
Oh, I see. And the algorithm said this remodeling network was decoordinated.
Right. So the researchers looked at mice lacking the TM176 genes, specifically when fed a high-fat diet to really stress their system.
What actually went wrong without those genes? How do they affect actin?
Well, TM176 genes regulate specific ion channels in the cell. Those ion channels control localized pH and calcium levels, which are the exact chemical triggers required for actin-severing proteins to actually do their job.
So without TMM176 regulating that chemical environment, the actin can't be severed.
Exactly. Under the microscope, the scientists literally saw denser, tangled actin filaments in the beta cells. The scaffolding had become overgrown and rigid.
Oh, wow. It created a physical traffic jam. It was literally blocking the insulin granules from getting to the cell membrane to be secreted.
Yes. And the researchers confirmed this in human T2D pancreatic tissue as well. They saw increased actin filament density there, too.
That is incredible. The computational network predicted a structural defect based purely on correlation mathematics, and the physical biology perfectly mirrored it.
It really is an elegant validation of the tool.
It completely changes how you visualize the disease. I mean, we usually think of diabetes as a chemical signaling problem, but this reveals it's also a physical structural traffic jam inside the cell.
Absolutely.
But wait, we've only been talking about beta cells. The pancreatic islets have other cells too. Like the alpha cells.
Right, the alpha cells.
When blood sugar drops, alpha cells secrete glucagon, which tells the liver to pump more glucose into the blood. And in type 2 diabetes, alpha cells often malfunction and secrete too much glucagon, making the high blood sugar even worse.
Yeah, that's a classic hallmark of the disease.
So if alpha cells are overproducing glucagon, their ribosome factories must be hypercoordinated and working overtime too, right?
See, you would naturally think that. But this raises a fascinating insight into cell-specific disease mechanisms.
Okay, what did they find?
They ran the entire dGCNA analysis on the alpha cells and found completely different network failures. While the beta cells had hyperactive overdrive ribosomes trying to translate more insulin, the alpha cells actually had decoordinated ribosomes.
Wait, really? Their translation network was weakening and falling apart?
Yes.
Why would the alpha cell slow down its protein factories while the beta cell speeds up? Especially if the alpha cell is known to secrete too much glucagon in diabetics.
The authors hypothesized this might actually be a compensatory mechanism.
Oh, trying to fix the problem.
Right. The alpha cell might be actively trying to reduce its own glucagon translation. It's sensing that the patient's blood sugar is already dangerously high, so its internal gene networks are desperately trying to shut down the glucagon factory to stop the liver from pumping out more glucose.
Well, the body's trying to heal itself. The alpha cell is hitting the brakes, but the overall system is just getting overwhelmed. Man, how does all of this deeply intricate cellular biology connect to what we are currently doing for patients in the clinic?
It casts a very revealing and honestly somewhat concerning light on current clinical practices.
How so?
Think about some of our blockbuster diabetes drugs, things like sulfonylureas or even the GLP-1 agonists. A major mechanism of these drugs is pushing the beta cells to secrete more insulin.
Right.
Sulfonylureas, for example, force calcium channels open to manually trigger insulin release. GLP-1s boost cyclic AMP to enhance that same secretion pathway.
They basically force the cell to push more hormone out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But your analysis of the networks just showed us that the insulin secretion networks in T2D beta cells are actually already hyper-coordinated.
Yeah.
The cell is already trying to push as much out the door as possible. It's the structural networks, like the actin traffic jams and the stress networks, the UPR, that are failing.
Right, so consider a massive manufacturing factory where the shipping department is already working at 150% capacity, but the assembly line is literally collapsing under the stress.
Oh, man.
The roof is caving in, the machines are sparking, the emergency response system is broken, and our current medical approach is to walk in and start whipping the shipping department to pack boxes faster.
That is a terrifying analogy. We are demanding more output from a cell whose internal physical structure and stress management systems are fundamentally crumbling.
That's what the data suggests, yeah.
By understanding these precise coordination failures, we realize that just demanding more insulin isn't solving the root cause of the beta cell's failure. It might even be burning the cell out faster.
It's a very real possibility.
So why isn't every medical researcher doing this dGCNA network analysis on every single disease right now?
Well, it comes back to the critical limitation we discussed earlier, the required data depth.
Oh, the 1 million reads per cell.
Exactly. dGCNA requires an incredibly high read depth to find these correlations. Right now, most single-cell sequencing in biology uses cheaper, high cell count methods.
So they sequence tons of cells, but not very deeply.
Right. You might sequence 50,000 cells in a tumor or a pancreas, but you only get a very shallow snapshot of each one. Those cheaper methods simply do not capture enough data per cell to map these complex, subtle coordinations between genes.
The mathematical signal just isn't there unless you sequence deeply.
Exactly.
It is a trade-off in science right now, broad and shallow versus narrow and deep. But the deep dive here clearly paid off by revealing entirely new biology.
It really did. And the immediate next step is leveraging these newly identified networks as targets for new drugs.
Like targeting the traffic jams directly.
Right. Genes like CEBPG that control the stress response, or TM176 that control the structural barriers. If we can develop therapies that target those specific coordination failures, we might be able to clear the structural traffic jams and restore the beta cell's health, rather than just forcing a sick cell to work harder.
That would be revolutionary. To bring it all together for us, what is the core takeaway from this massive undertaking?
I think the central insight is this. Type 2 diabetes isn't just about individual genes turning on or off. It is about the subtle breakdown in coordination across critical cellular pathways, like the emergency stress response and physical structural organization.
It's about the symphony.
Exactly. By mathematically analyzing these networks, researchers have mapped the precise cell-specific failures driving the disease, revealing hidden mechanisms that standard sequencing missed entirely.
If measuring gene coordination can reveal hidden structural traffic jams in diabetes, what happens when we unleash this algorithm on cancer cells? Or the brain tissue in Alzheimer's? Could we map the invisible collapse of cellular infrastructure before the cells actually die? Are we about to rewrite the textbook on the root cause of every major disease? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Rewind.